Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Gimel and Aleph, three lines down. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the Braita that it brought yesterday with regards to the proper conduct when one stands up. Who they stand up for, and in which way do they stand up or pay kavod to those that are deserving of kavod. So now the Gemara quotes again from the Braita, Mamar, Yochol Yehadrenu B'mamon. You would think that the proper way to do hidur is through expending money. As Rashi notes over here, that when it comes to hidur, or the definition of hidur, he says, Ein lashon hidur, ela nisiyot panim, o b'mamon, o b'kibud varim. Because hidur is giving a certain amount of kavod, or reverence for the individual, that comes through either expenditure, or saying something that indicates that you have that sort of reverence, or relationship with the individual. So you would have thought, if you just had the word hidur, that would mean that you'd have to incur expenditure in order to do this. Tamalomar takum vehadarta. Tells you that there's this juxtaposition between the word takum and hadarta in the pasuk, that mipnei seva takum vehadarta pnei zakein, makima she'en bachisaron kis, just like standing up does not involve any monetary loss, haf hidur she'en bachisaron kis. So too, when it comes to hidur, it'll be defined or qualified by the statement of kima that you don't have to have any chisaron kis. Where it says, v'kima leipa chisaron kis, is it really true that standing up doesn't involve any monetary loss or possibility of foregone profits? Milo askinan da kanoke marginito. How do you know that he's not a diamond cutter or he is doing some important melacha, which when he stands up from it and stops, there is a loss, there's an opportunity cost here, whereby which he is now not doing that malacha, and he is losing money by engaging in standing up. So if that's the case, then there is monetary loss. So in the meantime, or the interim, when he stands up to give honor or kavod to this individual, he wastes some time or loses out on doing the malacha, and therefore there is monetary loss. Ela akish kima lehidur. The Gemara now reverses the limud and says that we're going to learn out kima from hidur. Ma hidur she'en bo bitul. That hidur does not involve any cessation or stopping of anything else. Af kima she'en bo bitul. So too, kima, the standing up, has to be in a case or a situation in which it does not involve cessation or desisting from doing something. Now, as Rashi noted, and we mentioned this Rashi before, the in lashon hidur el nisiyut panim o b'mamon o b'kibud dvarim ve'en b'mashma'o bitul melacha, that it involves maybe expenditure, it involves giving praise or saying the proper things, but it does not involve desisting from melacha. That is not called hidur, and therefore, by definition, hidur does not involve bitul melacha, and therefore, just like hidur she'en bo bitul. So too, the standing up is only standing up in a case where it doesn't involve desisting from work. So now, once you've said that, now kima cannot be involved in chisaron kis. Vakishnami hidra the kima. Now, once I've already learned that, now in reverse, I can also learn the limud back to hidur. Ma kima shein ba chisaron kis. Just like the standing up does not involve any monetary loss. Now, even though the Gemara said before that standing up could possibly involve monetary loss, now, once it's already been qualified by the word hidur, which teaches us that the type of kima here is not the kima that involves bitul melacha, then the only kima that is done over here is kima that doesn't incur monetary loss. If that's the case, now when I go back to hidur, the hidur is now qualified by this new kima that we learned from hidur itself. And af hidur shein b'chisron kis, so too, the hidur over here is also something that does not involve any monetary loss. And from that, we learn out that one does not have to lose money or incur monetary loss in order to stand up for the individual. Mikan amru, ein balei umniyot rishaim lamod mipnei talmidei chachamim b'shah she'oskim b'melachtam. From this, we conclude that when it comes to craftsmen who are working, they are not permitted to stand up before a Talmud Chacham at the time that they're engaged in their work. Now, the statement here of the Gemara is strange, and Tosafot already picks it up because it uses the Lashon of Rishaim. They are not permitted. So what does it mean they're not permitted? Either one is Chayav, they're obligated to do it, One is patur. They are not obligated to do it. What does it mean? Ein rishaim. They are not permitted. So Tosafot over here brings two possibilities of how to explain the word rishaim. He says one possibility is the word rishaim is synonymous with chayavin, and therefore you would read this, which is ein baliyumayot chayavim lamod b'pnei talmidei chachamim. They are not obligated to stand up before talmidei chachamim. And we're going to see on the top of the Amud Bet today that the Gemara again reuses the word rishaim. And Tosfot again brings this interpretation that the word Vashai means Chayavin. So that's one possibility of, or the other possibility is that we are dealing here with craftsmen that are not working on their own work, but rather they are employed by someone else or working for someone else. And therefore, it says here, Ein Rishaim, they are not permitted to stand up. Because if they stand up, it's not their own money that they're giving up. It's not their own time that they're giving up. They're actually on the clock or someone else's clock. And therefore, they'd be wasting their money. And that's what it means, ein rishain. Now, obviously, there is an afkamina between these two explanations. In the explanation where we're speaking about doing work for others, then that's where they are ein rishain. They are not permitted to get up. But that implies that if it was their own work, that they would be permitted to get up. And they could make that decision or maybe even obligated to do that when it comes to their own work. On the other hand, according to the first interpretation of Tosafot, which means Ein Balei Umuniyot Rishaim means Chayavim Lamod, that means that they are not obligated to stand up, but if they so choose to stand up, they can stand up. So depending on how you read it, we'll have an afkamina as to what you think in terms of whether they can voluntarily get up and make that decision to get up, or whether they might be obligated when they're not engaged in someone else's work. There are some that connect between the two. There are some Rishonim that connect between the two items and say that if we permit you to stand up when it's your own work, that will cast aspersions on people who are doing work for others who do not stand up, or the other way around. Some say the only reason we would say it's not permitted to stand up when you're doing other people's work is if when you were doing your own work, there was no obligation to stand up. And therefore, there is some sort of connection between them, which would also help understand the next part of the Gemara, which is below. Is that not true? Vatsanan. Don't we have a Mishnah? Kol balei umniyot omdim mipnehem. Anybody who is a craftsman who is working has to stand up before them. The Mishnah over here is referring to those that are mivi'ei bikurim, bringing up the bikurim to Yerushalayim. And as they pass and bring up their bikurim to Yerushalayim, these individuals have to stand up. So we see that even though they're engaged in their work, they still have to stand up for these individuals, v'sholim v'shlomam, and they greet them. V'omrim lahem, achenu anshei makom ploni, bo'achem l'shalom. Our brothers from such and such a place, welcome to Yerushalayim, or welcome on your trip to bring the bikurim up to Yerushalayim. So from here you see that they have to stand up when it comes to people passing by with the bikurim or doing the mitzvah, and why shouldn't that be also applicable to standing up for a Talmud Chacham? So again, the question you could ask here is, this is talking about people engaged in their own work, whereas if we say that the previous statement in the Gemara was talking about craftsmen that are doing work for others, how could you correlate between the two cases? But that's maybe what the Rishonim, who connect between the two, see as why the bikurim are relevant to our case over here, because one influences the other. In that if we allow you to stand up and not those that are doing other people's work, it would cast aspersions on them, therefore the din must be equal. Or the fact that we would only not permit you to stand up when you do other people's work if you are not obligated when you're doing your own work. And over here we see that you are obligated to stand up when you do your own work. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan explains to us, Mipnehem omdim, mipnei tamidei chachamim ein omdim. That's right. The Mishnah says you have to stand up for them, those that are bringing the Bikurim. And the deal from that is for them you stand up, for Talmidei Chachamim you do not stand up. Amar Rabbi Yossi bar Avin, Borei kama chaviva mitzvah b'shata. See how amazing it is to do a mitzvah in its proper time, because over here, Sharei Mipneim Omdim, that when it comes to doing the mitzvah Bikurim at the proper time, there we obligate the craftsmen to stand up. Mipnei Talmidei Chachamim en Omdim. To stand up, to give kavod to a Talmid Chacham, that we forego, and the craftsman does not have to stand up. Rashi says, "V'doma shani hotam." Maybe that's not the reason as to why we stand up, but it's different over there. De'im kein nimtzeit ata machshilan natid davo. Because if you don't stand up for them, you might cause them to trip up or cause problems in the future. Which is that if we do not greet them properly and we do not give them the proper respect, then they will not return the next time, or they won't feel that the journey that they undertook and the difficulty they undertook to bring the Bikurim up to Yerushalayim was worthwhile. And that's what it says in Rashi, Shelo yaviu od shiomru nevazimanu b'nei henim, that they won't come again because people say people don't really look up to us. They think that we are some lowly people. They don't give us any kavod. But it's not like what Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin says, which it doesn't have to do with the love of the mitzvah or the particular greatness of a mitzvah done b'shahta. V'ilu b'nei adam hanikarim chashuvim ba'ir. But when it comes to Talmidei Chachamim, who are well known as important individuals in the city, vasukim b'mitzvot, and they're engaged in mitzvot, you don't have to stand up for them, because that is something that will not cause them not to engage in their work anymore, because it's well known that they do this, and that will not stop them from doing it. So here the Gemara draws a differentiation between that of Bikurim, where there might be a cost to not standing up, versus that of standing up for Talmud Chacham, where it should not impact on the standing or the efforts of that Talmud Chacham. Now, there are other reasons brought for that distinction that might derive from the same reason, which is, first of all, Bikurim only happens seasonally. It only happens at one point in the year. So it's not a burden, or it's not a continuous bitul malacha. On the other hand, when it comes to Talmud Chacham, that's a all-year-round halacha. And therefore, maybe there's reason to believe that you would stand up once for Bikurim, which is not such an imposition, versus that which is said by the Chacham, which would be a recurring mitzvah, which would lead to Bitul Malacha. In addition, the Rambam and the Perush HaMishnayot distinguishes between bringing a Bikurim, which involves a large number of individuals, or Rabim, versus the standing up for a Talmud Chacham, which is talking about a single party or individual. And obviously that would also have Nafkaminot. If the Talmud Chacham was coming with a huge entourage and they were a big Rabim, then maybe even over there, there'd be an additional requirement of Bitul Malacha, because it's similar to Bikurim that involves Rabim, as well as the fact that it's not an everyday occurrence. And it might be that all of those reasons that we just mentioned all correlate with each other. The fact that it's seasonal, that's why it has so many people involved within it in a single time. And because there are so many people involved with it, that requires Bitul Malacha, because it only happens occasionally and it involves Rabim. And then same in reverse, when it comes to standing up for the Talmud Chacham, why you wouldn't need to stand up in the occasions where he's one individual, this is a recurring thing that happens all year round, and it's not something that's going to cause achshala latid lavo. Amar Mar, so now again we go back to that braita that we quoted, and said, Yacho yamod mi panavi beta kisei, umi beta merchatz. You would think that maybe you have to stand up for him in the bathroom, in the bathhouse. Mar says, velo, don't you have to stand up there? V'ha rabbi chia, hava yotiv be maschuta. He was sitting in the bathhouse. V'chalif v'azel rabbi shimon barabi. Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi, went past him. And Rabbi Chia didn't stand up for him. And Rabbi Shimon was offended by that. So you see from that he expected him to stand up. So he went back and he told this to his father that Rabbi Chia didn't stand up for him. And he said, Shnei Chumashim Shaniti Lo B'Sefer Tehillim. Or you could read it, Shnei Chumshin Shaniti Lo B'Sefer Tehillim. Rashi reads it as Shnei Chumshin. Rashi says that I taught him 2/5 of Sefer Tehillim. Rashi here, and then the next Gemara also says it's not literally Sefer Tehillim, but rather the Midrashim that are associated with Sefer Tehillim. I taught him 2/5 of that Midrash. Tosafot over here brings an alternative that Chumashin over here is similar to the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and that Tehillim is actually divided up into 5 Sfarim, of which, and he enumerates them over here, each sefer ends with the word Amen, except for the last sefer, which is the final Perek Tehillim in Sefer Tehillim. And therefore, there is a subdivision of Tehillim into 5 books. And then, when he was saying here, Shnei Chumashim means I taught him 2 out of the 5 books of Sefer Tehillim. V'lomad mipanai, and he didn't stand up for me. V'tu, and we have another incident where Bar Kapara, v'amri la Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, either it happened with Bar Kapara, Rabbi Shmuel b'Yossi, have a yotiv bei maschuta. Again, they were sitting in the bathhouse. Al v'azel Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. And Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi entered again here. V'lo kami kame. And he didn't stand up for Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. V'ikput. And he was upset about that he thought it was offensive that they were not standing up. And he reported that to his father. I taught him 2/3 of a third of Torat Kohanim. Torat Kohanim is the Midrash Halacha on Sefer Vayikra. And he says here, I taught him 2/3 of a third, meaning 2/9 of Torat Kohanim. Seems to be here that there was a subdivision into thirds of Torat Kohanim. And he's telling him that even those thirds are divided also up into books of three or sections of three. And I taught him 2 sections or 2 large sections of one of those thirds. And yet, and he didn't stand up when I came by. So Rabbi said back to his son, Rabbi Shimon, Shema behen Yoshev umiharher. Maybe the reason that he didn't stand up was because he didn't notice you. He was so involved in the learning. And now Rabbi, being smart about this, says to Rabbi Shimon, maybe he's involved in the learning that you taught him in order to placate Rabbi Shimon and say he's thinking through the learning that you taught him. He's reviewing the learning that you taught him, and therefore he didn't notice you. And that's why he didn't get up. And Tosafot brings a corroboration of that. You can see that Tosafot Shema Yoshev Bemaher, Loyatzrich Lomar Behen. He didn't have to say that he was learning those things in particular. Do'adin Bishar Divrei Torah. It wouldn't matter what he was learning, as long as he was involved and didn't notice, maybe that's why he didn't stand up. Ella had the kamar hachi, so Hashem lireyav. Because the secrets of Hashem are to those that fear him. And that's what was actually happening. Rabbi Chia says that I was actually looking in Sefer Tehillim or thinking about Sefer Tehillim, which is actually what Rabbi Shimon had taught him. So you see that they were involved in the Torah that he taught him. And in some ways that diffused the situation because they didn't notice him, but they didn't notice him because they were reviewing what he taught him. So in one sense, that's a kavod towards Rabbi Shimon, and that's how Rabbi was trying to diffuse the situation. But the Gemara says, Taima, the behen yoshevim mehar her. The only reason they didn't stand up, or we give them an excuse for not standing up, is because they were engaged in learning. Halav hachi, had they not been engaged in learning, had they seen him, lo, then it would not have been the case, and they would have been obligated to stand up. So why are they obligated to stand up when the Braita tells us that you don't have to stand up in the Beit HaKisei and the Beit HaMechatz? It says, Lokasho. That's not a stira, that's not a contradiction. Haba bate gavai, haba bate barai. Depends where you are in the bathhouse. There's the inner chamber and the outer chamber. If you go to any of the antiquities in Israel and see the bathhouses there, you can see that there were these anterooms, places where they were dressed before they came in, or even on the exit side, the places where they were dressed. And then there are places in the actual bathhouse in the middle where they were undressed, where they went into the water, or they were in the shvitz that was there. So there are different locations within the bathhouse. And therefore, you would make that distinction, which is the Braita, which says you don't stand up, is talking about in the areas where the people are undressed. There's no issue of kavod, or it's not necessarily giving honor or reverence to the individual to stand up there, because it's a place where everybody is a little shy, everybody keeps themselves a little bit, and therefore showing honor there is not meaningful. On the other hand, in the outer chambers where people are dressed or people are waiting going in or coming out, in those areas, then it would be respectful to stand up and appropriate to stand up. Hachinami mistavro, that makes sense to make such a distinction. Da amar rabba barchana amar rabbi yochanan b'chol makom mutar laharher chutz mi beit hamerchatz mi beit hakisei. One is allowed to think about divrei Torah and engage in divrei Torah in any place except for the bathhouse and the bathroom. So you see that there are places where one may not engage or think about Divrei Torah. Yet over here, Rabbi Chia and either Bar Kapara or Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi were engaged in learning and thinking and learning. So if they can't be thinking and learning in the Beit HaMerchatz and the Beit HaKisei, then how were they doing that? It must be that there's a distinction within these locations between the outer areas and the inner areas. And they were in those outer areas. And that same distinction that applies by Divrei Torah also applies with regards to standing up. Gemara says, Duma la'onsei shiny. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe in general, the halacha is that one may not learn in those locations. One may not actively engage in learning. But if someone was already learning before they went in there, and then they can't clear their head from the learning, maybe over there, it's not a problem to learn. I mean, it is a problem to actively engage, but here the person is compelled to engage because his mind keeps working on it. He can't clear the Torah out of his mind. And so that's maybe why Rabbi Chia or Bar Kapara or Rav Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi were thinking about Torah, not because they were in the outer areas where it's permitted. maybe even the inner areas where it's not permitted, and therefore you can't bring in proof or corroboration from Limud HaTorah, because over there might be a special dispensation to learn, even in places that you're not really supposed to learn Divrei Torah. So now the Gemara again quotes from the Braita. Yachul yatzim einav k'mi shelo ra'u. Maybe you would think a person can close his eyes as if he doesn't see the Talmud Chacham, and then he will pretend not to stand up because he doesn't see him. It says, Atu b'rishia skina? Are we dealing here with terrible people, evil people here, who are intentionally trying to avoid doing mitzvot? Here the person closes his eyes, and we say, v'yareitam elokecha, that you have to fear God, that if you close your eyes, then we know that you're fooling around, we know that you're doing the wrong thing, but the problem is it says, v'yareitam elokecha, you fear God. So from when you said pasuk, it says, v'yareitam elokecha, seems like we're talking about or speaking about a person who fears God. The individual here who intentionally closes his eyes to ignore the mitzvot, that's not someone who is v'yareita me'elokecha. And this is just a good lesson or a general approach to the Torah as a whole, which is that in general, the Torah is not speaking to Rishayim, it's not speaking to Tzadikim, it's speaking to normal people. And therefore, you have to look at the mitzvot of Torah and the commands in the Torah in the context of understanding that it's spoken to regular people or normal people. And so that's what the Gemara says here. Out of Rishia, Skinan, Ella. This is how you have to understand it. Yochli atzim einav mikamei delimte zman chiyuva. You would think that he would close his eyes before the obligation sets upon him. So rather than what we were thinking until now, which is the Rebbe is there and he's closing his eyes so he can avoid the obligation, here we know that the obligation does not devolve upon him until the Rebbe is within 4 amot of him. So before the Rebbe enters into the 4 amot, he closes his eyes. So then, once the Rebbe comes into the position where he is obligated to stand up, he already had closed his eyes, and now he doesn't see the Rebbe there. So then he doesn't have to stand up for him because he doesn't see him. You have to stand up, and you have to fear. Meaning that you can't avoid giving the proper kavod or the proper engagement with the Talmud Chacham and fearing the Talmud Chacham, and you must stand up for them. You cannot close your eyes in order to avoid entering into the status of being chayav, but rather takum v'yareita says you have to fear God, and God knows that you're trying to circumvent the halacha in this case, and that's not acceptable because it's incumbent upon you to show proper kavod to the Talmud Chacham, and that if you're playing games to avoid it, that we're not happy with that. We want you to stand up, we want you to show proper reverence to the Talmud Chacham, and not avoid coming into the obligation. Tana, Ezu Kima Sheish Ba Hidur. What is a standing up that involves giving proper respect and reverence to the individual? Habi Omer, Zed Dalet Amot. That's only when the individual is in within 4 amot. Amar Abayi, Lo Amron El Brabo Shena Muvhak. That's only true when it's not his permanent Rebbe or his primary Rebbe, Aval Berabo Muvhak, Meloa Enaf. When it comes to his primary Rebbe or his real Rebbe, then it's the distance that he can see him. As long as he can see him, he's obligated to stand up. Abaye. And now it gives an example of Abaye, who was both a Talmud of Rabbo and a Talmud of Rav Yosef. And here it talks about his relationship with Rav Yosef. B'chehava chazile l'udne d'chamro d'Rav Yosef d'ate. When he used to see the ear of the donkey of Rav Yosef approaching, Havakoyim, he used to stand up. And now another example of this in reverse, where Abaye was the Rabbo Amuvah. Abaye havi rochiv chamro. Abaye was riding a donkey. V'kamaske aguda de nar sagya. And he was riding along the banks of the river Sagya. Yoti Rav Misharshia Rabbanan bi'idach gisa. Rav Misharshia and the other Rabbanan were sitting on the other side of the river. V'lo kamo mikameh. And they did not stand up for him. So as far as Dalet Amot are concerned, he's not within Dalet Amot of them because the river is sitting between them. On the other hand, Amar Lahu, he says to them, V'lav Rav Muvhakana, am I not your primary Rebbe? And with regards to primary Rebbe, it's Meloi Nav. That's a V. Anywhere you see him, if he's visible to you, you must stand up. Amalei, Lava Datin. We didn't pay attention, as Rashi says, Lo Niskarnu Lamo Chainu Turudim. We didn't remember to stand up because we were engaged in our learning. Now, the way Rashi describes it, it might have been that they kind of noticed him, but they were so involved that they didn't stand up. They forgot to stand up. The more likely explanation is that they didn't take note of the fact that Abai was there because they were so involved in their learning. Now, what's interesting about the halacha here that's brought by Abaye is that the Gemara asks, what is a kima sheish ba hidur? What is a standing up that involves reverence and kavod? So now, why then, when it comes to Rabbo Muvhak, does he have to stand up even below Einav? Because that's a failure in Hidur, and that doesn't change just because it's his permanent Rebbe versus some regular Talmud Chacham. So there are two ways to deal with that. One is to say that when it comes to a regular Talmud Chacham that's passing by, the individual doesn't have a clear relationship with that individual. So only when they stand up, when that person is within their sphere, meaning within Dalet Amot, does their standing up get connected to that particular individual. So in order for them to be obligated to stand up, the individual has to be close enough where there's an association between them. On the other hand, when it comes to Rabbo Muvhak, there is an existing relationship between the Talmid and that Rebbe. And therefore, it's obvious when he stands up that he's standing up for his Rebbe because people connect between the Talmid and his Rabbo Muvhak and his primary Rebbe. And therefore, the relationship already exists. And therefore, the standing up will be attributed to that Rebbe. And that's why Mloei Nav would be the obligation rather than Dalet Amot. So Dalet Amot is a compensating factor for the lack of relationship. So that's one way to explain it. The other way to explain it is that the standing up is for two reasons. When you're within Dalet Amot, the standing up is to give reverence and kavod to the Talmid Chacham that's there. When you're standing up, when the Talmid Chacham is out of that sphere, and you're standing up because he's Rabo Muvhak, the standing up there is not for the individual, the Talmid Chacham, or giving reverence to them, but for the person themselves to acknowledge that this is his Rebbe. And so his standing up, Miloei Nav, is for the person himself to realize and give reverence, not to that individual, but from him to understand that that is his Rebbe and he has to act differently when his Rebbe is here. And so therefore, you might have two types of kima. Kima within Dalet Amot, which is giving kavod to the individual, and then others can see that. Kima in Miloei Nav, which is for the person who's standing up, for him to recognize and acknowledge that this is his Rebbe, and that's the incumbent, what's incumbent upon him. So either one of those two explanations will tell you why by Rabbo Muvhak, he would have to stand up, even though it's outside of Dalet Amot and doesn't involve Hidur necessarily. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, Minayin zakein shelo yatriach, Tomal omar zakein viareta. So how do you know that when a zakein comes in, he should not bother the tzibur or cause them to stand up? Then because there's a correlation or juxtaposition over there of vadarta pnei zakein, viareta melokecha, that the zakein also has to have yarei or be Yarei Hashem, and that tells us that he should not impose on the tzibur. And the only one who knows it, of course, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amar Abaye Naktinan, Di Makif Chaye. That if he goes around, if he circumvents the Am, Chaye, he will have a long life. Meaning that if he takes the long route, then Mida Keneged Mida, he will have a long life. The long route means that he bypasses going in front of the people and causing them to have to stand up. So Abaye Makif, Rabbi Zera Mekif. So Abaye practiced that, and he used to go around the long way. Rabbi Zera Mekif. Rabbi Zera also practiced that and went around the long way, not to cause others to stand up in this case. Ravina, Habiyotiv Kameid Rabbi Yirmiya Midifti. So Ravina was sitting before Rabbi Yirmiya Midifti. V'chalif ha'u gavra kameid. And then an individual passed by them. V'lo michse resha. And he did not cover his head. Amar koma chotzif ha'gavra. How insolent is this individual that he passes by without covering his head? Amarlei, so he responded to him, Dilma mi matamachsia, maybe he's from the city of Matamachsia, Degise barabonon, where they feel comfortable with the rabbonon. So you learn a number of things from this, and this connected back to what we saw on the Gemara and Daf Lamed Aleph, as well as on the Chavtet, with regards to covering one's head, that covering one's head was a sign of kavod, as well as a sign of kovod rosh, seriousness, and in negation of a certain amount of subjugation or accepting the yoke upon themselves. We saw that with regards to the meaning of Yare Malko, it brings the fear of heaven upon the individual, as well as we saw the fact that it was associated with an individual who got married. And we see that uncovering the head is associated with a certain amount of independence and not being subjugated or under the dominion of anyone else. And that's both with regards to the person's relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, as well as the person's relationship with those Talmidei Chachamim, or those leaders of the community around him. And therefore, over here, Ravina thought that it was problematic that this person didn't cover his head when he passed by the Talmid Chacham. It was a lack of respect or reverence, and not covering their head was an indication that I'm not under your auspices, or that I do not have to give kavod to you. The answer that he tells him is that in Matamaxia, these people are so common, meaning that Talmid Chachamim are so common there, that they feel comfortable with them. They feel like they're buddies or friends with the Talmid Chachamim, and therefore they don't feel the obligation to cover their head because they see them as peers rather than people that they have to respect or look up to in covering their head. But here you see from this that when Gemara sees the covering of the head both as an indication of an nivut, humility and humbleness, and the proper way to approach both a Talmid Chacham as well as a Kadosh Baruch Hu, which would mean that the obligation to cover one's head would be maybe even obligatory when approaching Hashem, or praying to Hashem, or engaging in a mitzvah, which Rav Avadya Yosef in his Tshuvot brings that, and he thinks that may not be limited to men, but also included women, and he brings it up in other situations in which they're making a bracha at a wedding, and there are people there without kippot, or without their heads covered, whether that's problematic. Again, in circumstances like that, it seems obvious from the Gemara that the covering of the head would be, if not obligatory, at least very recommended, because when you're approaching Hashem, you should have that sense of humility and humbleness that comes with the covering of one's head. Now, the obligation to cover one's head outside of that, we saw that when it came to a person who was married, that there was some reason or indication that that was necessary, and that's the practice of the Ashkenazim, that once an individual is married, that they cover their head with a talit when they are davening. But also over here, we see that out of proper respect, when you're amongst people who have a higher stature, one should cover their head. Now, again, that might be sociological or cultural, and therefore might change with times. And that we've mentioned before when we discussed this issue, when it came to the inauguration of Kennedy, where he came to that inauguration without a hat on, that might have changed the cultural norms, and therefore the covering of one's head would not no longer be seen as an obligation or a sign of kavod, because here the person of the highest office of the country was willing to come to his inauguration without a hat on, and that might have changed the social norms in that case. Nevertheless, as we discussed on Daf Lamed Aleph, and again in the Gemara on Shabbat, and Kuf Yud Ched and Kuf Nun Vav, there the Poskim discussed the issue of wearing a yarmulke, which is definitely a midat chasidut, something that's proper because it brings the fear of heaven on the individual. Whether that turns into an obligation or not is subject to a machloket. And even if it does turn into an obligation, it's an obligation that derives from minhag, which will give people dispensations in certain situations in order not to wear a yarmulke. But in engaging in those dispensations, there's a lot of risk. And the poskim note that even though maybe it's permitted according to halacha, maybe people should try to avoid it or not do it because it's an indication of a certain amount of prikadol, a certain amount of removing the yoke of heaven. And we know that when a person starts to become less religious or less engaged religiously with God, one of the first things that happen is that they take off their yarmulke. They remove yarmulke because that's a sign of being released from that obligation and that being under the auspices of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's rule. And so therefore, it's important to wear a yarmulke, even if it's not a strict obligation. And the wearing of a yarmulke is very symbolic and should have impact on the individual and the way they conduct themselves in the world. Isi ben Yehuda Omer, Ipnei Seiva Takum, Afilo Kol Seiva B'mashma. That was the last of the opinions of the Tanaim that we saw yesterday. That Isi ben Yehuda says that Ipnei Seiva, Seiva simply means a person of advanced age, and therefore he says that you stand up for anyone who is elderly, irrespective of whether they are a chacham or not. Am Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha ki Isi ben Yehuda. Halacha is like Isi ben Yehuda, where you do have to give respect to those that are elderly. Rabbi Yochanan Avakai Mikamei Save Da Amai. That he used to get up for elderly that were not Jewish, that were not necessarily, forget about Chachamim, they weren't even Jewish. And he said, why? Amar Kama Harpatki Adu Alayu Dahani. How many life experiences have these people undergone? Meaning that the fact that they have lived so long and survived so long means that Hashem has looked favorably upon them. And they have gone through so much in life that maybe they have something to offer now. And that might be what Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here, that we may not require chokhmah in the sense of Torah, but maybe we require chokhmah in a different sense, that these people are not stam zkenim. These are zkenim that have gone through the travails of life, and therefore they have life experience with them, and they have what to teach us and what to give to us. And we see that Hashem is favorable towards them because they are still alive in their advanced age. And therefore, he says, Rashi, mikraot v'tzarot, ra'u nisim harbei umotim, and they've seen great miracles, and all the things that have happened, they can tell us, and they can actually teach us something. So one possibility is that's what Rabbi Yochanan is redefining what the word chacham means over here. Or you could say that Rabbi Yochanan is just noting why age is a reason to stand up, irrespective if they have tamidei chachamim or not tamidei chachamim. Rava, make him lokai. Rava would not stand up for these individuals. Hidur avidahu, but nevertheless, he gave them or paid them respect. But that means that he stood up a little bit, or he acknowledged them, whatever he did to give them respect. He didn't necessarily stand up fully, like for a Talmid Chacham, but he did give them respect. Abaye used to put his arm out for those that were elderly, meaning that when elderly people were passing by, he used to extend his arm to help them and to give them something to lean on. And Rava Mishadar Shluchei, Rava used to send out. He personally wouldn't necessarily go and do this for them, but he would send those that were around him or those that worked with him to go and help them out. And Rav Nachman Mishadar Gozai, Rav Nachman, who was the son-in-law of the Nasi, and he was the Av Beit Din, and he was involved in the political scene, and therefore he had people who worked for him or carried out his orders. So he used to send them out in order to do this. So they didn't necessarily themselves engage in helping out these elderly who were not Talmidei Chachamim, but they still wanted to show respect to them and still wanted to engage with them. So they sent their shlichim to do it. Or in Abaye's case, he extended his arm to help them out. That they were respectful and they showed proper reverence towards the elderly, even though they weren't necessarily Talmidei Chachamim. That's the way that Rashi reads it and most of the Rishonim read it. Rashi brings an alternative pshat, which is brought by some of the Rishonim, that this is talking about the kavod of these individuals themselves, and that these are things that they did in order to let people know that they should be mechabei them. They'd send out their messengers, I'm coming, come and stand up, or that Abaye used to lean on the individuals in order to give himself kavod. He would lean on them to move along. So it would be the reverse of what we're saying now, but the way that we read the Gemara and Rashi rejects that other alternative seems to be the simpler reading of the Gemara, because it flows with what we've been discussing until now, giving kavod to individuals that are not necessarily tamidei chachamim. So now, Rav Nachman says, Amar, ilav Torah, kama Nachman ba'aba ika b'shuka. That if it wasn't for the Torah, then how many Nachman ba'abas would there be in the shuk? It's a similar expression to what Rav Yosef says in the Gemara Psachim, Andaf Chofchet Amud Bet, which is that if it weren't for the fact that I had learned Torah, Kama Yosi Bashuk, how many Yosis would be in the Shuk? What makes me unique and what gives me the unique standing is the Torah that I learned. And that's what differentiates me from anyone else. And then Rav Nachman was explaining why he himself didn't get up to pay reverence or kavod to these individuals, but rather sent out his shluchim. Because it wasn't about himself, it was about the kavod haTorah. And since his standing as the son-in-law of the Nasi, the Av Beit Din, and the Talmud Chacham did not allow him himself to do it, but he still felt it was important, and that's why he sent out a shluchim, but didn't do it himself. So that's a balance between the kavod haTorah, which is what makes him special or unique, and the ability to pay proper respects to these individuals who are advanced in age. And so he sent out his people who worked with him in order to help them or to show them kavod, but he himself didn't get up in order not to somehow diminish the kavod of Torah because of who he was. And that's what he says now. If it were not for the Torah, I'd be like anybody else. And so therefore I have to act differently. I have to show that there's something special about the fact that I've learned Torah and that my standing and the respect that I'm paid comes from my learning of Torah. Amar Rabbi Aibo, Amar Rabbi Yanai, Ein Talmid Chacham Rashai Lamod Mipnei Rabo Ele Shachrit V'Arvit. A Talmid Chacham is not permitted to stand up before his Rebbe except in the morning and in the evening. Kadesh Lo Yeh Kvodo Merubeh Mikvod Shamayim. So that the kavod of his Rebbe should not exceed that of Shamayim, which is that we daven for a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we daven for Hashem in the morning, and we daven at night, or we say Shema in the morning, Shema at night. And therefore, why should your kavod of your Rebbe be any more so than that which is Odu Shamayim? Here again, Tosafot deals with the word Rashai, and he says over here, Tema, what about all these cases that we spoke before in the Gemara? Kohani de la'el ma'ri b'tlo kamu shachrit v'avit. All the cases that we spoke before in the Gemara where people were standing up were cases where they didn't stand up yet, or they didn't stand up twice in that day. Yali, ein Rashai, einu chayav. That when it says here, einam Rashai, means they're not obligated to stand up. They could stand up, but they're not obligated to stand up. So here Tosafot reads the word chayav and Rashai as being synonymous again, just like he did in the beginning of the Gemara today. Now, on the other hand, there are nafkaminot between these, whether you read this as einam Rashai, they're not permitted to stand up, or einam chayavim, that they're not obligated to stand up. And that's what Tosafot says in the previous Tosafot, v'nir l'fresh, t'din zeinu nuheg, el ba'otam hadarim b'beit harav. This is only true with someone who lives or is permanently around his Rebbe. Umistama amdu shachrit varvit. And people assume that they stood up twice already. They stood up in the morning, stood up in the evening. About tamidim acherim, chayvim lamod, afilo mea pi'amim beyom. When it's a Talmud from the outside, or someone who is a visitor or a guest, even if it's 100 times, they have to stand up. Shema yireh acher v'yachshadeim. Because maybe someone will see them and be choshed that they didn't stand up for the Rebbe. People who are there all the time, they know they stood up. They must have stood up once before or another time, so they have to stand up every time. On the other hand, someone who's a visitor, an outsider, nobody knows whether they stood up before, and therefore they'd have to stand up. Even those that live in the Beit Harav, who are permanent students there, if new people show up, and they don't really know, or they don't understand that they stood up before, they'd have to stand up again. So there are two tzadim for this. There's one from the tzad of the individual themselves, which is that they should not give more kavod to their Rebbe than they would give to Kavod Shemaim. But there's also an aspect of kavod that is not just showing reverence and respect for the Rebbe, but also others seeing you paying that respect and kavod towards the Rebbe. And therefore, there would be an obligation to stand up, even if you already stood up, even if you stood up twice. And that, again, would not be an offense or saying that we're giving more kavod to the Rebbe than Shemaim. Because over there it's done, not because of the respects that you paint the Rebbe, but to indicate to others that that's the way that you treat your Rebbe, and there won't be a problem with Marat Ayin or Chashad, as the Tosafot notes over here. So, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Minayin Zakein Shelo Yatriach, how do we know that a Zakein should not put a burden on the Tzibor to stand up? Tamalomar Zakein V'yareta. We saw that the correlation between the obligation to stand up for Zakein and V'yareta Melukachla, that he also has to have a certain amount of fear or reticence in causing the people to stand up. Hai amart shachrit varvit bilvad, if you say that he only have to stand up in the morning and the evening, amai lo nitrach, then why shouldn't he bother them? Chiyuvahu, it's an obligation. Meaning that you're obligated to stand up twice, so that when he goes in, the people should stand up, because that's what they're obligated to do. And then once it's past that point of 2 times, they won't have to stand up anymore. So why do you call it a tircha, to cause the people to stand up, if it's not a recurring theme throughout the day? I mean, they have to stand up every single time. Then you could call it a tircha. But here, where we have a finite amount of obligation for them to stand up, and that's shachrit and arvit, and they should carry out that obligation, why shouldn't the chacham walk in and cause the people to stand up? Elolav kule yoma. Must be that the obligation is to stand up all day long. And therefore, every time you enter, every time you go in, you're causing them to stand up over and over and over again, and that's the problem. Or it says, lo, olam shachrit varvit bovat. No, maybe the obligation is only to stand up twice a day. Afil hochi kamed efshale lo nitrach. Still, despite that fact, as much as he can, he should try to avoid causing them to have to stand up. Meaning that there's also a tzad from the Talmud Chacham's perspective, which is yes, that in terms of the Talmidim, in terms of the Am, that they have to give respect to the Talmud Chacham, that's important. But the Talmud Chacham himself also has to carry himself with a certain amount of humility and humbleness, which is that he doesn't cause or obligate the people to stand up on his behalf. And therefore, circumventing or going the long way is also for him himself to remain a humble or keep the humility of himself, that he doesn't get taken by the fact that people stand up for him. And we see these by stories of Talmidei Chacham in other places, that when people, the throngs, the people used to chase after them or come and gather around them, that had an impact on them. And they used to have to think in their minds to take down their feeling of haughtiness and feeling of greatness in order to maintain their normalcy and stability, because otherwise they would become infatuated or think so highly of themselves that it would start to impact on their conduct and their proper feelings. So Amar Velazar, Kol Tamid Chacham She'enu Moed Mipnei Rabo Nikra Rasha. Any Tamid Chacham that does not stand up for his Rebbe is called a Rasha, someone who is evil. Ve'enu Marich Yamim, And not only is he evil, he will cause the shortening of his life. V'tamudo mishtakeach, and he forgets that which he learns. Shenemar, because we learn from the pasuk, v'tov lo yeh the rasha, as Rashi notes over here, tov refers to Torah ki lekach tov natati lachem. Therefore, tov lo yeh, there will be no Torah for the rasha. V'lo yarich yamim kitzel, he will not live a long life like the passing shade or shadow. Asher enenu yarei milifnei lukim. What caused all this is because he does not fear God. So how do we know that this fear of God is associated with standing up with the Talmud Chacham? Morazu and Yodei Mahu. This fear, I don't know what it's speaking about. Kishu Omer v'yareita melukecha. When it says in the pasuk, by v'pnei seivat takum v'adarta pnei zaken v'yareita melukecha, then we know that hari morazu kima. So now we know that the fear refers to standing up for a Talmud Chacham. So Mar says, wait a minute, v'yareita melukecha is not a phrase that does not appear numerous times in the Torah. Ve'ema morat ribit. Why do you say that's the fear of charging interest? Umarat mishkalot, or the fear of cheating in one's measurements or cheating in business. So the Gemara brings these two items of examples of places where it says piareta melukecha, and so then you could associate that pasuk in Kohelet with these types of fears, and not necessarily standing up for a Talmud Chacham. Now, as far as Mora Ribit, over there, the Pasuk does say, V'yareitam Elokecha, or V'yareitam Hashem Elokecha, that you fear God. With regards to the Mishkalot, which is found at the end of Parshat Ki Teitzei, right before the Parshia of Zechirat Amalek, over there, the words V'yareitam Elokecha are not mentioned explicitly. And therefore, now, they have to deal with the Rishonim have to deal with the fact that the Gemara is quoting this, and it doesn't really say Ve'ereita Melukecha. Rashi says, or quotes the Midrash, that says the juxtaposition of cheating on measurements or in business leads to Amalek coming and attacking you, and that is Ve'ereita Melukecha. It's embedded or implicit in the fact that if one doesn't act properly here, these bad things will happen. Other Rishonim note that it says over there in the Parshia of Amalek, Velo Yarei Elukim, that they did not fear God. And so there is Voyere Elokim that's associated because of this juxtaposition with the Mishkalot. Others, like the Balei Tosafot over here, want to suggest that it's not referring to Mishkalot, but rather to Lifnei Yiver, Lo Titen Michshol, because over there it says V'yareitam Hashem Elokecha, that you should not put a stumbling block before the blind person. Over there, that's what it means, not Mishkalot, but Michshalot. And the Michshalot is referring to Lifnei Yiver, Lo Titen Michshol. And there are others that even connect between the two of them and say that Lifnei Yiver L'Titen Michshol is connected to the cheating on Mishkalot, and that is connected to Yirat Elokim. But be that as it may, they do connect this Yira with these situations, and these could be the cause for the punishment that is mentioned in that Pasuk. And why does it have to be the foregoing of standing up when a person or a Talmud Chacham goes by? So Rabbi Elazar, Pnei Gamar. He learns the Gzer Shava of Pnei, which is over here, it says, either mipnei sevatakum or vardata pnei zakein. And over there by the Pasuk Kohelet, it says, venu yarei milifnei alukim. And so you have this pnei. And that Zereshova tells you that the yira over here is that yira of not standing up. The problem that Tosafot has with his explanation is, it says, milifnei iver lo titen michshon. So over there, they do have milifnei, and it's actually a closer association with the word that is found over here. And therefore, why doesn't Rabbi Elazar also include lifnei ver lo titen michshol? And therefore, some suggest over here that the mishkalot is not really referring to measurements, but rather the parshava ona'a, which is overcharging or undercharging a person, which there does say v'yareita melukecha. And the reason that they mention mishkalot over here is because the connection between ona'a and cheating on mishkalot, which is a form or a subset of ona'a. And then, why do they mention mishkalot and not ona'a? It's because of the juxtaposition to the parshiyah of Amalek, showing you the terrible sin that is involved in such an item, and what will happen to individuals who cheat in this manner. So, that's how they avoid the problem, because otherwise, the pnei would also indicate that the pnei ver lo titen michshol should also have been a viable option over here. Ibarluhu. Bino v'hu rabo. If his son is erudite and is actually his Rebbe, mahu lamod mipnei aviv, does he stand up for his father? Now, you have a tension here, which is that the son is the Rebbe and the father is the father. So can the question really, and the Gemara will say this, is from both sides. that the son stand up for the father because out of respect for his father he should stand up? Or is that a pgiya because he's also the Rebbe of the father? And the same thing the other way around. Does the father stand up for the son because he's his Rebbe? Or should the father not stand up for the son because he is his father? Tashma. Darmalei Shmuel, the Rebbe Yehuda, Shinina. So Shmuel says to his Talmud, Rebbe Yehuda, Shinina, you keen Talmud, you erudite Talmud, or again, we said the other definitions of Shinina that is found in other places in Shas, Kum Mikame Avuch, you should stand up for your father. And we just saw the story with that. Yechezkel was Rebbe Yehuda's father, and we saw that Rebbe Yehuda was correcting his father, that he was actually a greater Talmud Chacham than his father, and he was his father's Rebbe. And so, despite that fact, Shmuel says to him, you should stand up for your father. It says, no, Shani Rabbi Yechezkel, the Baal Masim Havel, that Rabbi Yechezkel had a unique standing because he was an important person in the Tzibor. Seems like he was involved in Sarchi the Tzibor, he's involved in Stoka. And because of that, a few of my Shmuel, Nami Kaimi Kameh, that even Shmuel felt obligated to stand up for him because of his important stature and all that he did for the Tzibor. And therefore, the respect that was paid to Rabbi Yechezkel was not just because he was his father, but he was also a unique individual that even caused Shmuel to stand up for him when it wasn't his father. And that's maybe why Shmuel was instructing Rabbi Yehuda to stand up for his father, not because he was his father, despite the fact that Rabbi Yehuda was his Rebbe. Ella, my kamarle. So then, what was he telling him? If that's the case, that everybody stands up for Rabbi Yechezkel anyway, why is he telling Rabbi Yehuda that he should stand up for him? The whole world stands up for him. Hachi kamarle. Zimdin d'ate me'achurai. Sometimes your father will approach from behind me. Kumat mikame. You should still stand up for him. Velo tichush liyakra didei. And don't worry about my kavod. It would be disrespectful to stand up in front of Shmuel while Shmuel is teaching him or speaking to him. And he's standing up because his father is approaching from behind Shmuel. So Shmuel says, don't worry about that fact. You should stand up anyway out of kavod, out of respect for your father, despite the fact that I'm engaged with you and it might be seemingly slightly disrespectful. I'm okay with that. Whether he's waving his kavod over here and saying it's fine, or whether that's the proper conduct is unclear from this. Bino v'hu rabbo. And again, here, this is the question in reverse, which is that it's his son who's his Rebbe. Ma'ush yamod aviv mipen av. Does the father stand up for the child? Tashma. Da'amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Ani eni kedai lamod mipnei b'ni. Says that I shouldn't have to stand up for my son. Ela mishum kvod beit nasi. Except for the fact that he is now part of the house of the Nasi. Taima da'ana rabbe. The reason that Rabbi Shimon Levi did not feel compelled to stand up is because Rabbi Shimon Levi was the Rebbe of his son. How Ihu Rabbi had the situation be reversed, where the son was the Rebbe, Kaimina Kameh, then I would should have, or it seems like he would have stood up for him. So Rabbi Shimon Levi was dealing with the issue that his son was a part of the house of Nasi, which would have obligated him to stand up for him. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Levi was his son's Rebbe, and therefore he didn't feel like it was proper that he should stand up. But his reticence was because he was the Rebbe. Had the son been the Rebbe, Rabbi Shimon Levi seemingly would have felt compelled to stand up, because both he was part of the house of the Nasi, plus the son was the Rebbe. Rabbi says, "Hachi kama ani eni kedai lamod b'pnei b'ni ve'afilu hu rabbi." They amend this statement and say that I shouldn't stand up for my son, even if he was my Rebbe. Da anavua, because I'm his father. Ela mishum kvod beit Nasi, but I have to stand up because he's a part of the house of the Nasi, and out of respect for the institution, I need to stand up, irrespective of the fact that I am his father, and in this case happens to be his Rebbe as well. But his emphasis was on the aspect of being a father, not the aspect of being a Rebbe. And from this, you couldn't prove anything, because you could explain it, that he was saying simply that, as a father, he was not obligated to stand up. And therefore, you could come to just the opposite conclusion as what we tried to before. See, by the who? Rachuv kim halech dami olo. When someone is riding on a donkey, on an animal, are they considered to be walking or not? So this obviously has implications in many areas we're going to see in a second, but if the Rebbe is not walking, but rather the Rebbe is seated on a wagon, he's seated on an animal and he's passing by, does the individual have to stand up? Do we look at the position of the Rebbe, and the Rebbe himself is seated, and therefore you don't have to stand up for him? Or the fact that the Rebbe is moving, whether it's the fact that the animal is moving or the wagon is moving, that's enough to be considered that he's in motion. If he's in motion, you need to stand up for him. So Marvayi Tashma. We can learn it out from this Mishnah in Nigaim. Now, there are some questions about the Girsa and how it's quoted. We'll just read it the way that it's quoted over here, which is, Tamei Yoshev Tachar Ha'ilan. If a Tamei Nigaim is sitting under a tree, with the Tahor made, and the Tahor is standing, Tamei, then the Tahor becomes Tamei. Tameo may takara ilan. On the other hand, if the tamei is the one who's standing, but tahor yoshev and tahor is sitting down, tahor, he is tahor. Vim yashav hatamei, if the tamei person then sits down, hatahor tamei, then the person who's tahor becomes tamei. This is a din by negaim, which is that negaim have a din like ohel mate, which is that when someone has tamei tumat mate, or there's a mate in an ohel, the tuma is transferred from that individual to the other people that are there. Just because they're under the same roof, or covered by the same object, that carries the tuma from tumata mate to this individual. The same is true by tumata negaim. Tumata negaim also have a din of tumat ohel, but there's a little difference between them. And that's what the Mishnah is noting over here. Whereas by tumata mate, it doesn't matter who's in motion, who's seated, so on and so forth. If you're under the same roof, or under the same covering as the tumata mate, you become tamei. On the other hand, by negaim, that there is a requirement that the person that is tamei or has the nega is seated or is stationary. And if they are planted there, if they are mit'akev there, then anybody who passes by, whether they're moving or sitting, becomes tamei. On the other hand, if the tahor person is the one who's planted there, and the tamei individual is passing by, then the tuma does not take effect. And that's what's being described here in the Mishnah, questioning who is in motion and who is seated. Now, in motion doesn't necessarily mean they're actually walking, just means they're not seated. They haven't been staying there. They're not mit'akev there. Versus someone who is yoshev, which means that they are stationary or they are staying there for a duration of time. And that's the distinction between whether the tamei is standing or the tahor is standing, and vice versa, if they're sitting down, as to whether the tuma is conveyed. Some claim this is only true, like when you're under a tree, which is not a fixed ohel, but like a temporary ohel. Whereas if you were in a house or in a fixed building, it wouldn't matter. Or others say that this is a din and ohel in general with regards to negate. The important thing is the next piece of this Mishnah, which is v'chein be'emen hamnugat. So it's true with an evan, a stone from a house that has negaim. That's this week's parsha. We think about negei batim. So negei batim, if a person is carrying the stone, this is exactly our question. We want to know, when you're carrying a stone, is a stone considered to be in motion, or is the stone considered to be stationary? The Mishnah over here connects between someone carrying a stone and a physical person who sits down or walks. What you see here is that we only look at the person carrying the stone, we don't look at the stone itself. If that's the case, then if you extrapolate to the din of Tamar Chacham, it doesn't matter that he's sitting on the donkey. If the donkey is in motion, it's as if he is walking. Just like when you're carrying the Eben HaMnugat, it's considered as if it's moving. And when you sit down with the Eben HaMnugat, it's considered as if it sits down. It basically becomes one with you. And similarly with the Tamar Chacham, who is on a wagon or is on a donkey, they're considered to be in motion in that case. Amar Rav Nachman bar Kohen, Zot Omeret. From this you would conclude, Rachuv Kim Halech Dami. Someone who's riding on a donkey or in a wagon is like walking. Shma Mina. You can see that from the Eben Menugat, that's the case, and therefore it would require one to stand up when the Rebbe passes by, even though he's seated on whatever object is moving by. Ibalu, Ma'ul Amod Bipnei Sefer Torah. Does the person have to stand up for a Sefer Torah? Reb Chilkia, Rabbi Simon, Rabbi Loza Amre, Kal v'chomer, Bipnei Lomda Omdim. If you have to stand up for a Talmud Chacham, which the Torah requires, Mipaneh Lo Kol Shekei, certainly you have to stand up for the Torah itself. You have to stand up for those that are learning Torah, and they only get their kavod, or derivative kavod, from the Torah itself. Then if you stand up for them, you of course have to stand up for the Torah. Rabbi Eli, Rabbi Yaakov Bar, Zabdei, Habayatve, they were sitting down. Cholif Azel Rabbi Shimon Ba'aba, Bikamu Mikameh. Shimon Ba'aba was passing by, and they stood up for him. Amar Lahu, he said to them, Chado, Datun Chakimeh. First of all, you're a Chachamim, Vana Chaver, and I'm only just a Chaver. So first of all, you guys are more important than me, and so you don't have to stand up for me. Vod, Klum Torah Umedit Ne'lom Deha. Should the Torah have to stand up for those that learn the Torah? Now, what he is suggesting over here is that they were engaged in Limud HaTorah, which means that they were like Torah, and he simply was passing by at that time, and so he was deemed to be like a Talmud Chacham or a Lomed Torah. So he says, why should you have to give kavod to me when you're the real thing? You're a Torah. Sava like Rabbi Elazar. He held like Rabbi Elazar. Dama Elazar ain't Talmud Chacham Rashai La'amud Mipnei Rabo. A Talmud Chacham is not permitted. Again, here you see the word Rashai. So is that mean not permitted, or does that mean ain't chayavim? You're not obligated. But seemingly here, ain't Rashai means you're not permitted to stand up. B'shash osik b'Torah. In a case where he is engaged in learning Torah, because it would be inappropriate. If the only reason you give respect to the Talmud Chacham is because he learns Torah, then if you're engaged in learning Torah, it would be inappropriate to stand up for him at that time, because you're demeaning the Torah that you're learning in order to give kavod to one who learns the Torah. And so therefore, by staying engaged in the Torah, that's the equivalent kavod of standing up, or even a greater kavod than standing up for that individual. Layit ala Abaye. Abaye used to curse people who followed this position of Rabbi Elazar, because he thought it would lead to the demeaning of Talmidei Chachamim, and not treating Talmidei Chachamim properly. And therefore, he felt that it was proper that people stood up at all cases, in all times, even if they were engaged in Limud HaTorah. V'bitu achrei Moshe ad bo ha'ela. They used to watch Moshe and look at him until he reached the tent. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yitzhak Nafcha, Chadam al-Gnai, one of them said that that was a negative pasuk, V'chadam al-Shevach, that it's positive. Meaning that why were they looking after Moshe? Was that because they were looking for bad things about him? Or is that because they were positively thinking about Moshe? Madam al-Gnai, the one who says that it was denigrating Kedita, as is mentioned in Midrash. The Gemara here doesn't explicitly say it. Rashi quotes the Midrash that they used to look at him and say, look, how big he is, look how fat he is, it's all coming from us. And that they're having these negative thoughts about him. It's not relevant to the Gemara, so the Gemara didn't mention explicitly. Mada Amar Leshevach, the one who says that was praiseworthy, Amar Chizkia, Amar Li Rabbi Chanina, Braid de Rabbi Abau, Amar Rabbi Abau, Amar Rabbi Dimi, de Min Haifa, Chacham, Over, Omeid Milavana, Abdalad Amot. When a Chacham passes by, then you have to stand up for the four Amot, when he's in your sphere. Kevin Shavar Dalad Amot, you shave. Once he's passed the four Amot, you can sit down. Av Beit Din Over, Omeid Milavanav Meloinav. The Av Beit Din comes by, and you have to stand up for him until he goes out of sight. Kemen Sharvar Dalad Amot, Omeid Lefanav Miloinav, you have to stand up for him as soon as he comes into sight. Kemen Shover Dalad Amot, once he's passed your Dalad Amot, you'll shave, you can sit down. Nasi Over, if the Nasi is passing by, Omeid Lefanav Miloinav, you have to stand up from once he comes into sight. Ben Yoshev, Ajay Yoshev Bim Komo, and you can't sit down until he finds his seat or he returns to his place. Shinemar, and that's from this pasuk. That's what it means, Leshavach. That they looked after Moshe until he reached his tent, meaning that they remained standing behind Moshe because he was like the Nasi. Moshe was like the Nasi or the Melech, and therefore they remained standing from the time that he came into sight until the time he left sight or he returned to his tent, because then he was no longer in sight, and therefore they didn't have to remain standing any longer. They had to sit down. So from there you learn this din. Now this goes back to what we said earlier, that there might be a difference with regards to individuals and your relationship with those individuals. When you're standing up for a Talmud Chacham, it's only relevant if he's in your sphere because that creates a relationship between you. On the other hand, the Abbeit and the Nasi, whose relationship is from his position or his standing, then you're standing up. It's clear you're standing up for his Kavod because you have a relationship with him, irrespective of him being in your Dalet Amot, but just because of his position of power, just like Raboam Muvhak. You have a relationship that exists outside of your just physical sphere, but because of their standing or because of your relationship, that creates a certain amount of presence, and therefore you would have to stand up for longer durations because it's clear you're standing up for that individual because either of the standing of that individual or your relationship with that individual. Okay, I'm going to stop here. Two lines from the bottom of Lamed Gimel, Amud Bet.